Saturday, January 6th, 2024. This is Chimp.
And this is Captain Brunch coming to you live from the storage closet. Oh.
It's the first lit of the year. This is Saturday night at LIT.
And we're in Bitcoin Grove tonight in Miami, Florida.
Enjoying some lo-fi intro music, you son of a gun.
So, Chimp, what do you mean you're tired of shit?
What are you talking about?
You told me a few minutes ago, we were talking kind of, you know, casually, and you're like, I'm tired of shit anyway.
No, I'm tired of your shit.
Oh, wow. That's what you meant.
That Jeez. Hasn't changed. 2023 to 2024. But I was saying I'm the same person as last year, just with a different shirt. Actually, I'm going for different colors this year. I noticed that last year, I primarily wore a lot of blues and greens. It's probably because of my shoes.
Oh, because you're trying to match your... Yeah, I think that makes sense.
And then my watch is green. I have a lot of blues and greens for work or just different things, you know? And now I'm going to go for a more embracing the fire colors. Reds, yellows, oranges, bitcoins. You notice my shoes today. I'm done with my
They're
old...
They're like a neon orange? What color is that?
I don't fucking know, but... I'm done with my
Not
other
much cursing.
Shoes.
Actually, well, new year, same old sailor mouth.
Just with a new look. I'm changing my branding. How are you, Brunch?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. You know, it's a new year, whatever that means. You know, I was actually kind of thinking about it recently. And
that's right. And happy Insurrection Day.
Oh yeah, I forgot to put that on the show notes. Right. Insurrection Day. Apparently some people are either ironically or unironically celebrating January 6th as Insurrection Day. They didn't do that last year, or I feel like it didn't have the same. I mean, obviously people talked about it like, oh, January 6th, you know, and they're going to talk about it probably for a long time. I wonder if they're going to talk about it like they talk about the Bastille, you know, the storming of the Bastille during the French Revolution. Yeah, what are your thoughts on this hallowed Insurrection Day?
I think we need like celebration music, you know?
Do you have celebration music?
If you stall long enough, we'll hear it. Yeah, Insurrection Day! Woohoo! I don't know if it's copyrighted, so I'm going to stop it.
Oh
now.
My God.
I thought it was a general celebration song, but then it had someone's name on it. Anyway, so
what's that
yes.
song called? Maybe you shouldn't even mention it.
There you
it's
go.
It's probably better.
It's AI generated. And that's not copyright infringement, right? Perfect. Anyway, so what's on the scoop?
So last Sunday, it was New Year's Eve and I went to the beach. And you did not.
I didn't.
And it's, you know, I hope you had a good evening. You definitely didn't drink any of the brandy that Ariel bought just for you.
What? Yeah. You bought brandy just for me?
Yeah, well, to drink with you.
I wish I freaking knew.
Well, you would have if you would have shown up.
You didn't tell me this. I haven't
talked
to
Ariel. Why was she
supposed
to tell you that? She expected you to come to the party or whatever it was, and you didn't come, and so you didn't have the brandy.
People.
People. She ended up giving it to someone else. She was just like, oh, do you like brandy? Like, yeah. He's like, here, have this bottle. You're like, oh, I'm not going to drink it now. She's like, I don't care. I'm not drinking it. Oh, it was for Chimp. And Chimp didn't come.
I feel so bad now. I didn't get off of work till 8:30 and then I started to shower.
Excuses. You didn't have to shower. We were at the beach. It was like stinky and
No, I had
beachy.
To go to work the next day. I definitely had to shower.
Oh, well, I mean, you know.
Wash my hair, walk the dog.
Ugh, God, you had to work the next day. What kind of horrible company do you work for?
The one that pays me?
Oh, that's good. I mean, mine paid me not to work that day.
So how was your celebration? Happy birthday, Brunch. Woo! Wait, there's got to be a celebration thing. Where is it?
Well, there's at least the clapping, right?
Damn this thing. Happy birthday, Brunch. Woo! All right, calm down. Don't give him a big head. So how was it?
It was pretty low key. I mean, I did so little preparation or planning or inviting of people. And I couldn't even get you to go. So you can only imagine people who are less committed to me.
I didn't even feel pressure to go. Usually there's pressure. But yeah. This time I was like, hey, you coming? No. Okay.
Yeah. I really wanted to go to the beach. And, you know, I thought about it and I hadn't been to the beach the whole year. So the last time I was at the beach was the previous time at the, you know, for New Year's Eve. So, you know, one thing that was really cool, well, we didn't get the lifeguard stand because like some bum had like a tent set up on the lifeguard stand.
How dare they try and live there? What the
fuck? And I didn't want to, you know, like bother them. And then later Jay was like, oh, come on.
But isn't that what happened last time too?
Yeah, but Jay was there earlier. So like he basically went up to them and talked to them and he would have done it again, but it was just so, so low key. And there was so few of us that I didn't even feel like it was justified.
So last year, 2022, your birthday was also on a Saturday.
Well, no, it was on a Saturday instead of a Sunday.
Oh, okay. I forget. Because I'm thinking...
Interesting. So that means that next year it must be on a Monday then.
I don't know.
No, we did not do the show last year.
Yeah. Next year it's on a Tuesday. What?
Is it on a Tuesday next year?
Yeah, it's on a Tuesday.
That's weird. Oh, this must be like a daylight savings thing then.
Or a leap year.
Let's look at February. I mean, sorry. That's what I meant when I said daylight savings thing. I definitely meant leap year. Because daylight savings
is 29th. There's 29 days.
Nothing to do with it. There you go. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Because if the pattern was to move forward one day, but now it moves forward 2 days, then the only way that makes sense is if we have an extra day.
What? 2024 is a leap year. Holy poop. That's great.
And you know what's kind of so fascinating about leap years is that it goes to show you how shitty our calendars really are. And how, I mean, well, no, that's not true. I should completely recontextualize this. The purpose of the calendar is to help human beings coordinate things. The calendar does not represent an accurate passage of time. And this is, and like, neither does a clock, you know, like a clock and a watch. They don't represent accurate passage of time. Their purpose is to help humans coordinate things between each other.
I didn't see the atoms.
Well, this is the thing though, right? Because if you used something like a cesium atom, you know, then you get situations like the leap year where suddenly, no, there are not 60 seconds in a minute and there's not 60 minutes in an hour and there's not 24 hours in a day and there's not 365 days in a year. Like none of those things actually mean what we think they mean. They're just approximations. And so, no. But that's, you know, that's kind of fascinating. And then I wonder, because I'm really interested in doing and in like developing an understanding of how time is kept in Bitcoin. Because every time a block is created and added to the blockchain, there's a timestamp put on that block by the miner. And there's apparently like things that they can do. You know, they don't have to be honest about the time. They can lie or they can put a somewhat inaccurate time down. And I don't really know why, but I know that it can happen. And so that's kind of interesting to me because I've long kind of pondered about the idea of a sort of universal time that was not dependent on the earth or like didn't depend on where you were in the universe, so to speak, but that it was maybe somehow related to like the age of the universe itself. And so like one idea I had was imagine just some sort of a clock that was measuring the time since the Big Bang. Now, given like how the age of the universe keeps changing and they keep redeciding how old the universe is, I don't know that would actually work. But you know, so that's pretty much my rant about holidays.
So if someone were to graph all the time steps to try to see if there's like any sort of like regularity to the blocks. I mean, you know, like approximately 10 minutes, but it'd be interesting to see it visually.
Yeah, and there's probably a way to do that. I do know that it is really good at keeping it to about 10 minutes. Like the average is really close to 10 minutes over the years. And so that's cool. I would love to learn more about that algorithm and how that algorithm, you know, but obviously that algorithm is using the information in the blocks, right? Like the algorithm doesn't have a reference of time outside of the blocks.
Right.
It's just looking at the blocks and the block says a certain time in it. So that's kind of, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing.
But we should all have a record of those timestamps. It's not like someone will have a different record.
Yeah. And there's this project called Open Timestamps that apparently uses like the Bitcoin, you know, uses the Bitcoin blockchain somehow to like timestamp records, you know, to say like, you know, at this particular time, we are making this proclamation or we are publishing this document or we're saying this thing. It's an interesting project. I believe it was invented by Peter Todd. Open timestamps. And
it sucks because you can only use the effects on your thing. So like if you just keep talking.
Oh, on one channel. You can only use it on one channel.
And
so
I can't
if you
do
don't
that.
So you
that
know, because I'm
channel one. And you are not channel one. I have all the power, you silly little chimp.
No, I have the power because I could just mute you and it's great.
Okay, well maybe you
have the power, but I have
the superpowers.
I mean, you have the ultimate power, but I have the superpower.
From the Book of Knowledge, it says Open Timestamps is an open source project that aims to provide a standard format for blockchain timestamping. And then there was like some use case recently that would have been really interesting for Open Timestamps. But the whole thing about Open Timestamps is that it's a way to, you know, it's a way to timestamp something. Like you imagine like a notary public, you know, you go to a notary public and, you know, you and some other person or a group of people are all signing a document and the notary public is saying, I have been certified by the local jurisdiction to also sign this document and claim that it is done properly. So Open Timestamps is kind of a way to perhaps start removing, you know, the need for a third party and to be able to do things in public.
So you want to get rid of notaries?
No, that was just kind of an idea I had in my head, but like Open Timestamps, God, I can't even like it could be, I don't know.
Art says there was an old project back in the day called Proof of Existence that did notarization on the chain.
Well, see, so I don't know the mechanism by which Open Timestamps actually does the stamping, but and it doesn't require you to actually do a Bitcoin transaction, which is kind of the cool thing about it. Because if it required you to do a Bitcoin transaction, then you know that would be all kinds of problematic. So you said Tony coming in with fuck notaries.
Jeez, I mean they need to put food on the table. They need to buy their drugs. What do you have against notaries, Eastside?
Oh, Eastside Tony reminds me that we are a value for value podcasting 2.0 compliant podcast, which means if you're listening on a modern podcast, which you can find at podcastapps.com, that you can participate in the value for value, which means sending us Bitcoin, which is money. So you can send us Bitcoin, which is money. And people who send those Bitcoin, which is money, we call that, well, if they, it's called a
waiting
boost
for that.
and if they include a message, then it's called a boostagram. So we very warmly invite our audience that if you would be so kind, and if you are enjoying this time you're spending with us, why don't you go ahead and send us a little,
here's your cue to boost.
you should have clicked the other one.
Nah, the moment was gone. We need to work together. Okay.
Yeah, we're gonna work on
this
one.
Boost.
Boost.
This one is
podcasts are cool.
And the other one's Dame Jennifer.
Yeah, we need more. We need more of those jingles. They're funny. But yeah, so I've got a link that I'm gonna send you, which means I have to load Telegram.
Okay. While he does that, I will perform my number one hit. Thank you.
Did I talk about my idea for a Nostr chat app, web app?
We spent a whole episode talking about Nostr chat.
Well, that was with Liran, right? But yeah, but we didn't talk about the Nostr chat thing that I wanted to do with
web app.
Yeah.
Maybe not a web app. I don't know.
What? So how do you know about the web app then?
No, I don't think you mentioned a web app around Nostr.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, and if I did, then this, I feel horrible for bringing this up again. No, I don't.
Don't worry. I'll complain. Let's look at the video.
You'll find it later.
No.
I mean, I should just check my show notes, but anyway, so the whole
Gymquisition.
Well, don't do that yet. So, cause I want to talk about the Nostr chat. So I have, you know, I really want to have this app and I mean, I think I have mentioned something about it, but, for basically for the Time Chain Foundation, which apparently Satoshi had also registered a website called netcoin.org or something like that. Netcoin. So that's interesting. I might do something with this netcoin term. That could be kind of fun. So maybe instead of the time chain archive, it'll be the netcoin archive. I don't know. I like that. Yeah, I like names, you know. So for the Time Chain Foundation, and then maybe for brunch too, I really want to have.
I feel like a lot of people will be like, oh, some shit coin, and just ignore it.
Well, no, but the Time Chain Archive is going to be just like a specific project that the Time Chain Foundation will do. So, you know, whatever. We can work on that later. Power over Ethernet hashed the file being notarized and then stored the hash into a Bitcoin transaction. Oh, proof of existence. Oh, you're confusing me, Art.
Power over Ethernet.
I know, right? And why was I thinking about, like, I've been thinking so much about too many things. Okay, so the Time Chain Foundation chat, the whole idea is that I want to have a chat room that people can go to like chat about the Time Chain Foundation and our efforts and the educational stuff that we're going to do. And, but I want it to be such that the user controls their identity. So if you had a Nostr profile, like I would want you to be able to log in with your Nostr profile. But after listening to the Podcasting 2.0 podcast from Friday, yesterday.
Was that cheese?
Yes. You're just going to eat this?
It's cheese.
Okay. Anyway, so they were talking about like how they were federating Podcasting 2.0
using Mastodon.
I think that's so cool. So like, I wonder if we could find a way to federate like, so this chat room or forum or bulletin board or whatever the hell we're going to call it. Right. I wonder if we could somehow integrate it between Nostr and the Federation and it be its own thing. Right. Like, so the idea is that it's its own relay. I want to run a relay that will host this forum chat room bulletin board thing. And then people can come in either from the Fediverse or from Nostr, or they could create a brand new account, which with that brand new account, if they wanted to, they could federate or they could go and export a Nostr NPUB. So I think, I really think this is going to be a hackathon project. Like, I think if we can create a general sort of a generic MVP that's anyone could implement and like brand with their own, you know, branding, and they could run their own relay. I think it could be a really interesting and useful project for open source organizations, open source like groups and projects that want to have a public interface, but want to eliminate the friction of people having to understand how to use Nostr, how to, you know, like already having a federated account or something like that, you know, like, okay, well, if you don't have any of that stuff and if you're not plugged in that way, well, then just start a brand new account with us and start from scratch. And then if you wanted, you could take this account with you on Nostr.
Now, can they also sign in with Facebook or Instagram?
No, fuck all of that. I'm sorry, but fuck all of that.
Damn, like, walled garden, geez.
This is, I mean, or maybe not. I don't know. Like, okay, at first.
I like the hackathon idea. That sounds great. Prize would be what, like a date with you or something?
Well, it's, you know, I was talking to Randy recently and he was saying, you know, like oftentimes hackathons don't even really need a prize. The whole thing about the hackathon is just that you're gathering all these energies and all this focus for a specific period of time, as opposed to kind of just like leaving it to the wind, you know? So it's just the idea of getting people to all focus for a specific period of time. So it could be like a week, it could be a weekend.
Are they typically at one location? Like, do you want to run a conference like room, or is it like, you know, everything online?
I don't know. So like this idea, it might be something that I try to do. Like, I try to lead a project maybe, and then get developers to join the project. And so like, maybe it would be people from other jurisdictions and from other parts of the world. And we're all kind of like telecommunicating on the internet. I don't know. Or it might be something that maybe through, like, you know, Aaron Daniel, he's doing the Resolver project, him and other people. So maybe, you know, the Time Chain Foundation would use Resolver to like put a bunch of bounties perhaps. And like, maybe we will, you know, offer to pay people to solve these problems. I don't know exactly. Like, maybe we'll run our own hackathon. Maybe it'll be part of Bitcoin Grove. Only time will tell.
Only time will tell.
Yeah, I'm not sure yet, basically.
Time is on my side. Yes, it is.
All right. So why don't we, you know, so one of the things I say about the internet is that in the, you know, in my earlier days, like let's say 2005, 2006, et cetera, to me, I saw such great potential for the future of peer to peer, you know, of direct sharing of the information becoming free. And so, so to me, I lament, and I've mentioned it on the show. I mentioned it at Bitcoin Brunch. I've mentioned it in many, many conversations with many people that I consider what ended up happening on the internet to be a tragedy and a perversion of the potential of the internet. So instead of the information being more free, and instead of peer-to-peer being an ethos that was explored and advanced and simplified and made even simpler and easier to use and better to use, the opposite happened. We got subscription services. And I've talked about how I think we're reaching kind of a turning point where the subscriptions are sort of, it's becoming too much and it's just turning into cable where you have all these stupid cable packages. And so pretty soon people got to start cutting the cable. So James Stephanie Sterling, a game critic, a video game critic, who I believe I've mentioned a few times, maybe I featured on the show before, but they...
James Stephanie?
Oh gosh, long story. Okay. Like it's a trans thing.
Okay, I wasn't sure you're mispronouncing Stefan, but
no. So originally they were James Sterling, and then they're trans, and they this now go by James Stephanie Sterling.
Okay, at least there's some consistency there with the James.
Yeah. It makes it easier for everyone. You know, I mean, I think a part of it is that their livelihood is this YouTube channel they have,
right?
And if you just completely transition and you just like. With all the friction and you're like, fuck you and accept me for who I am. Well, you're going to probably lose a lot of your audience. And so I think probably that was a part of it because they definitely complained a lot about how much their audience has abandoned them since the whole transition process began. But this is not about that. This is not a story. This is about, because I actually appreciate, even though James Stephanie Sterling is for all intents and purposes, a communist, I do think I happen to appreciate a lot of critical theory, a lot of Marxist critical theory. And so this, you can go ahead and play this link.
Oh, thank God.
All right. Until about 1554. All right.
Damn, that's four.
So we might be pausing it along the way, but because this is a really good rant that I think is, yeah, just go ahead.
I can't hear anything.
You'll never find it.
Okay.
Fuck everything except the executives who skimmed tens of millions of dollars from the profit their overworked and underpaid outsourced animation team earned for them. And yet, as they take content we paid for away, hoard media in vaults, and refuse to even release things, they still have the insulting temerity to whine about piracy, literally the only thing helping a lot of art stay accessible. The state of television services today is fucking appalling. It's ironic that conveniently collected subscription services like Netflix, when streaming really took off in the 2010s, went to a huge way to combating media piracy because it was quicker and more convenient to pay a subscription fee and get almost anything you wanted instantly. People were happily paying again because it was the media they wanted free from the overpriced
All right, so I think already the point is being made that if, you know, the reason why people moved to subscription services is because it was convenient. You just pay a monthly fee. You've got this one account you sign into. I mean, back then, right? It was like Netflix, maybe. You have the one account, you sign into it, and then there's your content. It's real simple. Whereas if you wanted to do torrents, you had to go to a torrent tracker website. You had to have a separate, torrent. What was the software called?
Client.
So you had to have a client, and then so you'd have to find the right torrent, and you know, oftentimes it was hard to find a good torrent, and you know, and then a lot of the torrent trackers were sort of these shifty, seedy websites full of porn and malware and pop-ups and things like that. So the whole thing was more or less unappealing to the average consumer.
And if you really want to be in the thick of it, you had to be seeding as well.
Yeah. And so again, so to me, the potential was that we could have adapted and evolved the peer-to-peer marketplace to eventually become, you know, usable and convenient for the average consumer. But that, unfortunately, as we see with a lot of open source, with a lot of like free peer-to-peer movements and projects, they don't have that kind of capital investment. They don't have the profit, the same sort of profit motive. Unfortunately, or it's not the perceived. They don't have the same perceived profit motive as the traditional ways of producing these kinds of contents, whether it's software or media or entertainment, et cetera. So So it is more convenient. It's so convenient. It's so easy for the dumbasses of the world to just log into a Netflix or a Hulu. Let's continue.
Or just watch YouTube all day.
Yeah, exactly. Like me, you asshole.
What's up with the internet here?
Confusing tyranny of cable TV with all those expensive channel bundles that guaranteed you were paying for shit you didn't want and still drowned you in commercials no matter what you got. Yeah, there was a brief, glorious period where you could get one, maybe two subscriptions and access an ocean of relevant TV and films. Okay, as soon companies are...
I'm reminded, Amazon Prime is now implementing commercials. So... You know, again, so this, did I not mention this last week?
Probably, but.
Yeah, but I mean, but this is a perfect time to remind people that, so the subscription model is so actually, like when there's actual competition. So in the beginning, when there wasn't a lot of competition and when everything was kind of nebulous and everyone was sort of like, oh, you know, it was easy. It was kind of easier to pick sides because, I don't know, everything was so clicky. So some people got Apple TV and some people got Hulu. And I don't really know anyone who got any of these things, but some people did. And then eventually these people got more and more because, you know, this was exclusive to that show and this was exclusive to that one, you know? And so, for the people who were pirating things, that was no big deal because we just, you know, like all of it. See, this is the convenience of pirating, is that you can do it all in the same place. It doesn't matter who produced the content, whether it was iTunes or Hulu or Netflix. When you're pirating, it's all in the same place. You know, you've got your client and then, you know, like the client I use has a search function in it. So I just search for what I want in, you know, and it's regardless of where it was produced, I can just get it all in the same place. But unfortunately, it doesn't have the same convenience for these other services.
And then when you get a virus, you got to turn off your computer, turn on your laptop, and then figure out what happened.
I haven't had a virus from that in a long time. So, but what ends up happening is that as more and more companies start to move over to that business model, the margins, the profit margins go down because now consumers have all these choices and they're becoming less and less willing to actually subscribe to everything. So they're getting a little picky and choosy. And so they're losing money. And I think we're going to see, and more of these subscription services are going to start putting commercials.
And then we're back to cable television.
Exactly.
Oh my God, I can't do seamless. What's up with the internet here?
Is at large took notice. Their clamoring fucking greed overrode all reason, and they systematically ruined the good thing we all had going. In a few short years, corporations divvied up the spoils, taking their content back from these convenient services and putting it behind their own exclusive services. Eventually, every fucking studio seemed to have its own subscription, to the point where the very thing that made streaming appealing was warped and perverted to resemble the very thing it had freed us from, cable TV. Only now it was even more expensive and even more confusing. Now, films and shows are becoming impossible to keep track of. They appear on one subscription service only to disappear and reappear on another. Content is released in limited time windows or just vanish overnight. New services keep popping up, continually carving content away from the other ones to ensure each one becomes less valuable. You have to fucking Google every movie and television program now to figure out where it fucking is. Paramount Plus has Twin Peaks and Twin Peaks The Return, but I had to watch a pirate copy of Fire Walk With Me because I couldn't find that anywhere. Thank you, Conrad, for that. The copy of Fire Walk With Me, I mean. He didn't make it so that it wasn't on any of the services.
Mm. What time
stamp
are we? Why
the fuck was anime?
1317.
Oh my God. Did I really want to keep going till 1554? There's got to be more. Keep going. There's more.
Boy, he's got at least 20 other fucks to go.
Maniacs on Hulu. Why weren't the Warner Brothers and the Warner Sister Dot on a service owned by fucking Warner Brothers? Where is Blackadder's Christmas Carol going when it's off BritBox in a few days? And who would be so fucking cunty as to take Blackadder's Christmas Carol off of the service in December? The answer to these questions is fuck you. Fuck Animaniacs, fuck Blackadder, fuck Cartoon Network, fuck Batgirl, fuck Willow. Archival is one of the biggest challenges in gaming. Preserving this art is tricky for a number of reasons, but perhaps the biggest is the fact that all this art is...
Do you agree? I mean, archival, right? Like, you're someone who likes video games, and I'm someone who likes video games, and I will generally buy any old video game that is recommended. Like, if anyone says this is a video game that it's 10 years old, it's 15 years old, but it's a really good game, like, to me, I will, you know, add it to my wish list, and as soon as it's, like, on a nice sale, I will buy it on Steam. Which, you know, the irony, right? Like, but that's the things, right? Like, convenience, right? So for me, it's more convenient to just buy this game on Steam than it is to try to find some obscure indie game that maybe is not so easily available on, you know, on pirating. But I think this is, so I think this, what James Stephanie Sterling is about to get into is the crux of why I included this clip. And so it's got more, it's not just to do with like companies and people trying to protect their profits and trying to make sure that, that their media is not exploited. Like, to me, the bigger picture is about culture and society itself and the preservation of our culture. You know, because when artists create work and then they put it out there and then they, you know, they want us to consume it. They want us to like it. They want us to become their fans.
They want us to pay for it.
They want us to pay for it, right? But that has an impact on us. And we don't, unfortunately, we don't have a system that protects that in the long run. Like, okay, as long as an artist or a piece of media is making money, it will be preserved and it will be cultivated and it will be protected. But when the piece of media or entertainment or data, whatever it is, stops making money, now suddenly it starts to get neglected. And so this becomes an issue with like, so I think of, there have been certain like independent small bands that I've liked over the years that, you know, aren't performing anymore, don't record anymore, and their tracks are very obscure. And I'm not even much of a music person, right? Like, I mean, I am, but I'm not like a huge music snob or a music consumer the way certain people are. So if it's hard for me to find certain music, I can only imagine someone who likes even more independent music, who likes even more obscure music. And so let's continue the clip that doesn't load quickly.
That's why you should always buy the CD.
If it exists.
Is being bought and controlled by an executive class that does not give the first fuck about preservation. Games aren't art to them. Hell, art isn't art to them. When human expression is just a commodity to you, something that's only important until it stops being profitable, you have neither the need nor inclination to do anything but strip mine its value and toss the desiccated remains in the trash. Art doesn't have a prayer of being given the dignity and respect of proper archival in a world where studios are refusing to release it for tax purposes.
Go ahead. I was gonna say, okay, so there's, it's interesting, like, I'm a big fan of jazz. There's a lot of jazz that was recorded in the 50s and 60s. A lot of, some of my favorite artists, Lee Morgan, Grant Green, whatever. They were just, the companies like Blue Note, the recording and publishing companies, would just record a lot of sessions. But a lot of stuff didn't get released because it either didn't fit the brand they were trying to do for a certain artist. Like, for instance, Grant Green was the funk soul R&B guy. That's not all he played. That's just what he was popular for. And like, that's what sold. But he had a lot of stuff that was more bebop, more hard bop, more blah, blah, blah. It never got released. It didn't get released until the 90s in Japan because Japanese labels were like, oh, this is great. Let's publish this.
And it was probably cheap to get their hands on it, right?
And then it finally got republished in the States in 2000. It's like, it's nuts. It's so, and that happened with a lot of different artists. Or some stuff came out in the 70s in Japan and it didn't come out here till, it's fucking nuts.
Yeah, or I think about, you know, in the case like where James Stephanie Sterling was just saying, like tax purposes. So I think there was, was it a Batwoman movie? There was some movie, I can't remember what it was, but you know, the studio went through all the effort. They, you know, filmed the movie, they produced the movie and everything. But in the end, they didn't think they were going to make money. So rather than release the movie, they decided to scrap the movie and to claim the whole thing as a loss for tax purposes.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. And so now like fans who, you know, you would imagine for months or years had been anticipating the release of this film, had been teased, who'd been drawn
into
it.
It's Batgirl. Calm down. No one cares. But I wonder about the people who worked on the film. Like, are they, just like a serious question, are they so tied emotionally to the work they did on the film that they would be sad that it never came out? Or is it more like, oh, whatever, we had fun, we did it, you know, we got paid for it, who cares if it ever comes up?
I think it's probably a mix. It depends on the particular movie, right? It depends. But it just, to me, I can't think of a universe. Like, I would rather live in a universe where we made art because we loved art and not because it had to make money. You know, like maybe that universe doesn't exist, but it does exist. Like that's the one we lived in. I mean, you think of the Renaissance and all of these, you know, like the Medicis and those are rich families who would just hire creatives to live in their houses and make stuff so they could show off to their friends.
So would getting rid of copyright help create that world?
I think so. But I don't think we even have to get rid of copyright because I think we're reaching a point where, you know, I talk about this in brunch and I talked about this like for a while now that I think we are, Bitcoin is going to reinvigorate a demand and a quest for quality, a quest to create things that are hard to reproduce, that are not mass producible. I mean, I don't know what it's going to be because, you know, the technology is advancing so quickly and the, you know, the medium of arts that exist today are so, you know, nebulous and just quickly evolving. It's hard to say, but I think we're going to come back to that soon because, well, you could just imagine if Bitcoin has another bull run, like if it adds another zero.
When? When?
Whatever. Whatever. So when
Bitcoin has... You shut your whore mouth. You say when.
So when Bitcoin has another bull run, you know, we're going to have some really, really rich motherfuckers out there with a bunch of Bitcoin. And I think Bitcoiners do like art. So you get those, you know, those Bitcoin artists who are pretty popular now and their artwork sell for multiple Bitcoin. And so this trend is just going to keep going. I mean, I think of, you know, like Fractal Encrypt, whose artwork I'll never be able to afford. Bitcoin Apex, you know, who I bought a print of his. Like there's a Brecky von something who he does sculpture out of marble, you know, like he hand chisels sculptures and stuff. So, you know, like there is this kind of thing growing out of the Bitcoin culture.
Let me ask you a question. That one print you got, that cool print, or whatever it was, if you could get a copy of it done really, really well
by hand
at half the price.
By someone else?
Yeah. Who just copied his work.
But this
perfectly.
Is the thing though, Chimp, is that like if someone else, like if there was someone willing to copy it for half the price, like that's a very talented artist. Why are they like, I don't want them to do that. I want them to do something original at half the price.
Sure. But I'm saying they're offering.
No, I don't want it because the whole point was I wanted to support Bitcoin Apex and I wanted to, you know, even though I don't even really care about the print, so to speak, It's just sentimental, right? It's just like, oh, you know, like this proves that I supported this artist. That's all it means. It's the same thing as NFTs, right? Like it's a relationship. I am demonstrating, I'm virtue signaling my support for the Bitcoin culture.
No, I completely agree.
Yeah. So no, I don't want, you know, I think to me that would be a waste. It would just be a total waste. Like that's fraud. Why are you going to fucking waste your time? Like just make something unique, make something else. That was the end of the video.
We've come a long way from the Deadpool game getting pulled 15, off of digital 54? Storefronts and throwing 14, all the previously 25. Mentioned oh. questions into the air. We've come a long, distasteful way with each step of the journey getting worse and worse.
Four is before five.
Yeah, yeah, okay, whatever.
Digital media is fragile. Stunningly, it's more fragile than an album pressed in vinyl or a copy of Hello, Hello on a well-worn VHS tape.
That has to be a Brit reference. What the fuck is hello, hello?
Hello, hello. Because it can just go. It can be taken from you, stolen out of your library. It's been demonstrated that not even purchasing the content guarantees you get to keep it. That is fucking diabolical. And it's what all these companies wanted when they first tried to rewrite the very concept of buying a product to turn it into some sort of vague rental where they still own what they sell you. At this point, piracy is more than justifiable. It's a moral fucking imperative. It was merely justifiable when Disney Plus charged a separate fucking fee on top of its subscription to watch fucking Mulan. It is merely justifiable when all of Nintendo's big games keep leaking a week ahead of launch and it's funny. But as a direct answer to HBO, Disney, and the media conglomerations that give companies so much capriciously wielded power over access to art, piracy is the right thing to do. It's the only bloody way to access a bunch of otherwise tragically lost content. Fitting. that after decades of shitting their diapers over piracy, media execs have directly turned piracy into an objectively moral fucking good.
1555.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, I think that's why I included it till the end. So, I mean, because at the end, you know, it mentions about the imperative. And I kind of agree. Like, I will, under just very special circumstances, will go to a movie theater or, you know, to a concert or something like that. It's got to be real special. You know, it's got to be a property that I'm just stupidly committed to. Because otherwise, it's, to me, it's objectionable. I don't want to participate in the copyright cartel system. And ultimately, I need to relinquish my consumption of that shit to begin with, right? Like, that's the real problem. The problem is is the urge to consume the content in the first place.
The copyright industrial complex?
Yep. They would be powerless if I didn't care about the content, right? Like, if we didn't care about their content, then they would be powerless. And so that is the world that I'm hoping that Value for Value brings us to, brings me to, right? Like, me too.
I was waiting for that.
I need to, hashtag. I need to read more, right? I need to get back to reading books that are old, books that are from before, you know, our time, that are not copyrighted anymore. I need to start, you know, disconnecting from all this bullshit modern stuff and start reconnecting to something else.
You need to get off YouTube.
Oh, speaking of getting off YouTube, so let me send you another YouTube link.
God damn it.
Here's a great story that I pulled off of the C-SPAN podcast. So this is Marjorie Taylor Greene.
And it comes at me with C-SPAN. Great.
This is Marjorie Taylor, and this is an interesting story that, you know, I hadn't, like, I know about this phenomena.
Please refer to her as MTG.
But I did not know that this was such a phenomena that was affecting politicians so much. So let's go ahead and check this out. As soon as it decides
drive
to load.
Me crazy. Okay.
U.S. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican from Georgia, is talking about the swatting she and her family were subjected to over the holidays. Swatting is when someone reports a fake emergency, often involving violence or threats of violence, to 911, and it results in a large police and SWAT law enforcement response sent to the target's home. An article in Axios.com reads that threats against lawmakers have soared in recent years, and the swatting incidents underscore just how close to home these threats can hit. And also, swatting calls have been rising nationwide, targeting not just lawmakers, but also schools and hospitals.
Oh.
Congresswoman Green was on Fox News Tuesday night.
Okay, so I just want to let people know who don't know what swatting is, because he didn't really explain it very well. So swatting is basically, and maybe they do explain it in the clip, but essentially, if there's someone you don't like and you want to play just the worst kind of joke, a very impractical joke on them, you call the cops.
Don't give anyone any ideas.
You call the cops and you tell the cops that something horrible is going on at that person's address. You say, like, there is a, you know, someone was just murdered and the murderer is threatening to kill themselves. Please send the cops right now. Or there's someone with a bomb, or, you know, he's got a gun and a child and he's locked himself, you know, whatever. You say something horrible and you give an address, and then, you know, invariably the cops show up and they overreact to what's ultimately just people at home doing nothing. So let's go ahead and listen to Marjorie Taylor Greene complain. Because that's what she's going to do. But
it's,
I mean,
actually,
I don't blame
terrifying,
her.
Jesse. The first time it happened to me, it was right after I introduced a bill to stop the transgender surgeries on children and to stop puberty blockers being given to children, because kids need to grow up before they make those kind of decisions. And it was a trans activist that started these calls on me. And you can see this video in my home where I had to go to the door in the middle of the night, where the SWAT team had showed up. They had gun in hand. They had been told that I had murdered someone and I was ready to either commit suicide, and that I was willing to shoot police officers when they came to my house. It's extremely serious, Jesse. It's so serious that not only has it happened to me 8 times, it's also happened to my family members. Both of my daughters were swatted over Christmas, along with dozens thousands of other congressmen, women, senators, and state government officials as well. And Jesse, I have to tell you, I've been very frustrated. I've expected the FBI to be able to track these people down. I've expected the Department of Justice to be able to go after these people. And now it has risen to such a level where not only have I been swatted 8 times, the Speaker of the House has been swatted, senators have been swatted. And I've started to ask, is this an attack on our government as well as an attack on the police? And is the Biden administration capable of handling what is happening with attempted assassinations on government officials? Because we know the Biden administration is not capable of stopping the invasion at the southern border, which has surely brought terrorists into our country.
And she managed to fit the border at the very end. Great job.
She's definitely got some good writers.
MTG.
Magic, and she's got some good training. But so that's kind of fascinating. And, you know, I do feel bad just a little, because otherwise I hate politicians. I don't hate anyone, but fuck politicians. But what do you think about that? So politicians getting swatted, and that must be a nuisance.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that sucks.
What an unpleasant life that must be.
I mean, I guess you put yourself out there just like celebrities. So, I mean, but in the end, you're going to get people mad no matter what. You're going to get somebody mad. Not everyone's going to be on your side. So,
to me, it's also strange, though, that the cops just, like, they just take someone's word for it.
But they have to respond to it.
Well, okay. I mean, I don't want the cops not to respond, but I don't know, like, you're going to someone's house and you're the cops. Like, there's no way for you to figure out whose house it is. You know, like, oh, wait, this is a celebrity, or this is like a famous person. This is a politician. Maybe we should call ahead. Maybe we should like make sure before we just show up and bust down the door.
What if they give them, maybe that's tipping them off.
The evidence. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I don't want to discount, you know, like that, but at the same time, it just doesn't seem like that's like, doesn't seem proper. It doesn't seem like good training to just run into a situation. I think of like the guy who, you know, like the guy from the school shooting, the cop who got found not guilty when he didn't run into the school after the shooter, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. Yeah. Sorry.
That's funny.
good, right. I think of that. Right. So like, obviously,
well, that was an op, so that's a little different.
Oh my God. But the point I'm trying to make is simply that you don't have to just run into a situation just because you know there's danger. And there's clearly precedent to show that you don't have to just run into danger. Like, you can have due diligence. You can second guess or ask for backup, or, you know, so it just seems this is yet another example of the problem of policing in America. Like, we don't know how to respond to situations.
I feel like they'd go into it, because if not, they might be held legally responsible if someone were to die or someone were to get away. Because
I'm not saying don't respond, but I just feel like there's gotta be a more professional way to respond than this.
Drones? You want to bomb the place? Like, what?
Okay, but with a drone, like, you could take a drone and you could maybe, you know, like an infrared drone, you can go and look and see if, you know, like what the situation looks like, maybe.
Then we have some huge privacy issues there, but I guess they do it anyway, so.
I mean, they're going to bust down the door with guns, so there's no privacy issues in that case.
But then anytime you hear that drone flying around, you're thinking, oh man, they're watching me whack off right now. Like, come on.
Yeah. So I've got this note here. I got a question for you. Is the FBI and other government agencies spying on Americans news? Is that news?
Wait, what? No. Oh, you're asking if the fact that that's happening, is that news?
Yeah.
I guess it depends on the person, but no.
Yeah, because...
Or maybe the extent of it is news to some people. Like, I guess... how large the effect is, or, you know, the massive collection, but
yeah. Yeah. I don't know why. It's something that, like, it's one of those things that most Americans probably don't know about. And it's the kind of thing that if you are a, you know, like a mainstream media consumer, you would likely even think it was a lie if someone told you that the government spies on us, and
yeah, you probably won't see it on a morning show or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I just think that's interesting. And so then the next topic I had on here was this interesting concept about the elections and how we've talked before about how the two parties have captured the elections. They captured the debate process. They run the primary process. So like there's all these different ways that the two parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, have sort of captured our electoral system. And the thought that I had was about how telecommunications have sort of changed the way that we can organize. So if you think about the Electoral College or the election system, a lot of it has to do with being able to organize across distances and time. We were talking, at the top of the show about the importance of calendars and how they help us coordinate events. And the elections, it's very similar, right? Like we have things like the Electoral College, because when our government formed, it wouldn't have been practical to have everyone in the country, or at least let's say all the eligible voters in the country, even though it was a smaller population than it is today, because of the relatively more archaic technology that they had at that time, they could not have had everyone vote on one day and be able to run an election, so quickly. So they had all of these processes to sort of make it so that masses of people could come to some sort of a conclusion, despite the fact that they lived far apart from each other and they weren't necessarily all available at the same time. And so we've got this situation now where we have a system that has been shaped in that context of limited telecommunications and trying to coordinate over distance and time. I feel like Trump has sort of upended that. I called him the social media president. He was, the first president to really win an election based on his own connection with the voters, not the connection of his campaign with the voters or the impact of his campaign, but his actual personality and the connection that his voters feel that they have with him. They feel a connection to him the same way a Taylor Swift fan feels that they have a connection to her. And that's something that other presidents didn't have before, I think because of the way that they went about the elections process. And this is being highlighted a lot this year in the sense that the Democrats are not even bothering with a debate. Trump is not participating, or he didn't participate in any of the Republican debates. And he's still the front runner because he is just playing on this methodology that I'm not going to say that he's perfected, but that he has more than anyone else understood how to take advantage of. And so I find that very fascinating. And
so it sounds like these archaic systems or representations of these systems, the debates, corporate media, everything, it's not catching up with what's actually happening.
Yes. I mean, so I think that this probably can explain a lot of maybe the issue with Trump versus Clinton, where the media, they were all focused on the traditional ways of doing things. So, polling the typical voters, the people who participated in the caucuses and all that stuff, but they didn't have the apparatus and they didn't have the methodology to properly poll and pull statistics out of the actual voters, the modern voters, because a lot of people voted for Trump, for the first time. A lot of people voted for Trump who were disillusioned with the system. There's a lot of things that could not be captured by the traditional system that was brought out by Trump. So I just find that fascinating.
I'm pretty convinced Trump is going to win again.
Oh yeah. I have, at this point, so I don't know what the powers that be want, right?
Either he gets assassinated,
he's not even the candidate yet, right? So we still have a long way to go until a lot of things can happen. But I do expect him to be the Republican nominee, and I do expect him to be the president.
Do you think he would make it as independent?
I mean, we've talked about this before. I think a Trump Kennedy ticket would be very popular. I think it would be very popular.
In a red MAGA jumpsuit.
And so I had one other topic then that this sort of is all leading me to. I had this realization, especially with the Marjorie Taylor Greene quote and the fact that she ended her quote with bringing up the immigration situation, and the fact that the immigration situation is also the thing that is preventing Congress passing Ukraine or Israel funding. I wonder, Chimp, if immigration may not be the cause of the next American Civil War.
Wait, are you saying that as it will be the cause, or are you saying it won't be the cause?
Yeah, I think it will be. I think that, Texas and New York seem like the polar opposites in this situation, although you can throw Chicago in there. I mean, you can throw Illinois in there as well. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I don't know. I'm just getting this weird feeling about just this immigration thing boiling over and really, the two sides just going further and further apart on the issue because of the fact that they can use it for election purposes, right? So it's not even really about solving immigration or addressing immigration or trying to limit, illegal immigration in the country. That doesn't matter because, as we've discussed many times, the rich people on both parties love illegal immigrants because it's cheap labor and we need cheap labor. There's no two ways about it. This country needs cheap labor. We've got a diminishing population growth rate. We have a lack of skilled labor. We lack labor in general.
Yeah, work ethic.
We have a country of spoiled brats who want to be YouTubers and OnlyFans content creators. So this is not a culture that is producing the kind of hardworking, nose to the grindstone workers that we need to run a rich, powerful country. So we need the immigration, but it's a great hot button issue, especially because it doesn't seem like anything's going to be moving with abortion for a while, and the other issues that tend to be hot button. And the war thing, I mean, that's the thing, right? Republicans, they can't be against the wars. They're completely for the wars. But so they have to find a way to be against the war without being against the war. And so this immigration is the perfect way to do it, right? Because they can be against the war even though they're for it, right? They can pay lip service and say, yeah, they're for Israel and they're for, they're for Ukraine and they're for democracy, but we can't give money for that though, because we have to secure America first. And I don't disagree with the logic. It makes perfect sense. Why wouldn't you worry about the budget that you're going to spend on your own country before you start worrying about the aid and assistance you're going to be giving to other countries? I don't know. Well, how are we doing on time? Because I can go in a few different directions.
2 minutes till we hit an hour, but I can keep going.
Well, let me just talk a little bit about work, and then we'll call it a show. And then I got some quotes. I'm going to do a little thing on Sandra Day O'Connor because she passed away not too long ago. And, may she rest in peace. And they featured her on C-SPAN not too long ago. And so I pulled a few quotes. But work, as you know, and as longtime listeners of the show will recall, I'm a part of an apprenticeship, and the class for my apprenticeship just ended in December. So my Thursday evenings are finally free again. Hallelujah. Which now seems to be, I'm going to have to go to Understanding Bitcoin Source every other week that Randy's hosting. So that's okay. My Thursdays are almost full again. But the class is done, but my work hours are not done. So I have to complete 4,000 work hours to finish the program. And
yeah,
I
was
600 hours short. Yeah, yeah. I know we talked about it, but I'm getting to a point.
This is the recap. Okay.
This is the recap. So the reason I'm 600 hours short is that I don't work an average of 40 hours a week. I probably work closer to 33 hours a week.
Lazy millennial. Yeah, we talked about it.
Well, so just the other day, my old supervisor, Joel, from the mechanics department, he said to me, kind of offhand, but, it was serious, but it wasn't a serious issue. It was just a serious comment that was said offhand. And he was like, you should come work under me again. you know, and then and part of the issue is that, you know, I work good with him and then I have a lot of free time. Like me as the electrician, they don't give me a lot of work yet because I don't necessarily have a lot of work to give me. And so I guess the idea was like, well, if I was working with him, then when I'm not doing electrical stuff, I can be helping out his crew and working on projects and just keeping busy. And so I was like totally actually for it. I'm like, yeah, I would love that. You know, I like to work with you. I respect you. You treat me well. I like to work with your people. And in regards to the hours, if I'm working with him, I'm more likely to get 40 hours or more a week. And so if I'm able to do it 40 hours a week instead of 30 something hours a week, I should be able to finish the program in 3 more months instead of 5 more months. So, you know, not that big of a deal, but just a quick little update about that. So I'm going to be doing some mechanical stuff again. So Friday when I left work, I was
in like on cars.
No, like the mechanisms of the yacht. So as the example I was going to give was on Friday before I left, I was removing a bow thruster on a boat. We hadn't actually removed them yet, but that was, I was in the process of removing a bow thruster. And that's when I get back on Monday. I think I'm probably going to be finishing that up. So that's kind of cool. And so I look forward to finishing and getting my certificate because I want to be done.
You're going
to
end your day smelling like Gojo.
Just my hands. Just my hands. We do have Gojo, but there's this other product. I don't remember what it's called, but it's like really, it's red and it's got salt in it. So the salt is like really good for like, you know, exfoliating and breaking down like oils and grease that had gotten stuck in your skin.
Yeah, my dad would always smell like oil, or his clothes would at least. Very familiar with that smell.
Yeah, sometimes I get like this smell and I'm like, damn, I smell like a fucking mechanic. And I don't like that smell. It's kind of disgusting. But at the same time, it also makes me feel like, well,
geez, how do you feel about mechanics? Whew.
Scum of the earth.
Scum of the earth.
No, wow. That's fire. That's firefighters. According to Kurt Vonnegut. There's a really funny quote in one of his books. And he's like, hooray for firefighters. Every other day of the year, there's scum of the earth. But whenever there's a fire, they're heroes.
God damn it. Fucking mute.
Chimp with the rollout.
Chimp with the rollout. Fading in, fading out. Where the fuck's the music?
January 6th. 2024, the first show of the year. We made it to an hour. Chimp, it was a pleasure.
Indeed it was.
So don't forget to boost us out there. We'll see y'all next week.
Send us some love or send any comments to Chimp at Audio Ghosts on Miami. This is Chimp signing out.
Captain Brunch saying goodbye.
This is the year of the leap and fire. And the Bitcoin bull run. That's right. Peace.